have a quorum. Let me shut my phone off here. Okay. I'd like to call the Tuesday, January 17, 2017 Amador Air District Board of Directors meeting to order. We do have a quorum of six today. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I have a motion to approve today's agenda or any modifications to it.
I'll move approval.
Second, Mr. Chair.
Okay, a motion and a second to approve the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries unanimously. On to public matters not on the agenda. These are discussion items only. No action will be taken. Any person may address the board at this time. And please limit your comments to 5 minutes or less. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to administrative matters. Item number one is the minutes of October 18, 2016. Have those been reviewed, and are there any comments or changes? Hermione, I believe Richard already talked to you about the spelling of his name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are there any other comments or changes?
Mr. Chairman, I have a dilemma.
What is that dilemma?
I was a member in October as the city of Jackson. So can I vote on those minutes, or do I abstain both ways, which I think is what I probably should do? Bob would have to abstain because he wasn't here.
I wasn't here, man.
Our county council gave us clarification on that even though you were not appointed then, if you've read the minutes, you can still vote on them.
That's my understanding as well, and that typically might include Bob as well.
Right.
Okay, so we could both vote.
Without your votes, we're hamstrung. So
that's why I thought I'd bring that up right off the bat.
Okay, so are there any specific changes to the minutes other than the correction of Director Forrester's name?
For all that, I'd move to approve the minutes as presented with the changes.
I have a motion to approve the October 16, 2016 minutes with the spelling correction of Director Forrester's name. And a second. Motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. On to item number two, the election of officers for 2017. I, of course, am the chair. Director Morgan is vice chair currently. Custom is to rotate, which would indicate that Director Morgan might occupy the chair position, and then we'll need a vice chair as well. Do I have any discussion on the matter? Yes.
I would like to see us follow that custom of Supervisor Morgan is the chair, and Supervisor Onetto fill the vice chair. I know we've had trying to get the city people involved, but their attendance has been an issue.
It's spotty at best.
Yeah, so I don't want people to think I'm just ignoring the city folks.
I appreciate that. Now that you're not a city folk anymore.
Right. I don't want to think I abandoned them.
I guess I'll volunteer.
Director Onetto?
I guess I'll volunteer to be a sacrificial lamb.
You're a good guy. I've always said that. Jim, did you have anything to add to that? We have a motion to...
We can handle both chair and vice chair at the same motion.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Any other discussion? Comments? Okay, I have a motion. Morgan chair, Onetto vice chair. Do I have a second on that?
Yeah, I'll second that. Mm-hmm. Third that, whatever.
Yeah, that's okay. There. I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries unanimously, and I'm happy to hand the gavel over to Director Morgan. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
All right. Let's go to item three, determination of meeting schedule for 2017.
Yeah, we have the schedule outlined in the memo for this agenda item, along with the dates for the meetings, and then just a rough idea of some of the expected key actions that occur throughout the year. Meetings, of course, are scheduled on the third Tuesday of the month right here. And, with that, we're looking for approval of this meeting schedule.
So the next meeting would be March 21st.
That's correct.
Any questions?
Is that every third Tuesday then?
Not every third Tuesday. If you notice it, we do have, June. Yeah, basically it goes March, April, May, June, July, August. Yeah, it goes every other month, yeah. And then occasionally we don't have a agenda, so we may not need a meeting.
I guess I misspoke. I mean, it's on the third Tuesday.
Yeah.
We have.
Yeah.
Right.
At 1:30 p.m.?
1:30.
And April, May, and June is just the budget. We'll meet those three for sure.
Yeah.
Why is there no February meeting? Or
because he's kind of doing every other.
Every other month?
Yeah, every other month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
More meetings, we can always call,
special meetings.
Sure, if there's a need.
This is pretty much the same pattern we followed last couple of years.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay. It is.
And that seems to have worked.
Yeah.
Any other discussions, questions?
Move to approve the meeting schedule for 2017 as submitted.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Oops. All kinds of seconds.
Well, exactly.
Second.
We'll take your second. Okay. All those
which
been,
second
it's been
did
moved
you take?
In second.
Okay.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the meeting schedule for 2017. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. Administrative item 4, understanding board member and district liability issues.
Yes, this is. I'm excited to bring forward this presentation by Mr. Dennis Timoney. He is the Chief Risk Officer for the Special District Risk Management Authority. And I've seen Dennis speak twice now at the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association meetings that I go to. And every time he speaks, there's a tremendous amount of feedback and dialogue and information that is discussed, and it's just a real valuable presentation in that it's a reminder of a lot of the issues that come up in local government, and in particular special districts for us. But I know that every time he speaks at CAPCOA, it's very well received, and after hearing him again the last meeting that I went to last fall, I thought this would be a good presentation to bring forward to the Amador Air District Board of Directors. So with that, I'll go ahead and ask Dennis to come forward, if you would.
I can flip you through.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to present in front of the board. I provided you a copy of our last annual report for SDRMA. I did that to kind of give you a background of what we do. We are a public agency formed under California Government Code 65. Provide risk financing for public agencies only in the state. See in the outline, we do have 11 air pollution control districts. Sacramento County, Sacramento Air Quality Management District, Placer County, North Coast, San Joaquin Valley, AQP. So So we've Great Basin. So there's several around the state that I interact with. We provide property liability and workers' compensation coverage to those members. So I want...
Oh, Mike, maybe speaking that mic a little bit. This one's taller, so it probably works
better.
Yeah,
that one will work better.
Oh, okay.
Is that okay?
Oh,
whatever the board likes.
That's better.
And there's people listening in audio, and they can hear you that way. Thank you.
Kind of makes up for when I was a child and I was told I talked too loud. So
my wife tells me that all the time. She said, yeah. Holler on the phone, so I've been trying to modulate my voice.
Well, now I have to talk loud because I can't hear, so that's probably the other thing. So if we want to go ahead. So as I indicated to the board, we are a public agency, so we follow the same governmental rules under the California Government Code as your board does. We have 501 members in our property liability program and 435 member agencies in workers' compensation program. So we do a lot of interaction. I don't know if the board's familiar with the California Special Districts Association. So that's a group that we partner with, and they do more of the legislative arm. We do the risk management arm of that. And then you have the CSDA Finance Corp. So we all work together. We're based out of Sacramento, so we like to consider ourselves local. And as I said earlier, we're all up and down the state. So we consider. So what this really developed is, as our annual report indicates, we do a lot of work with public agencies throughout California. And the one area that I've really developed a training course on is what is the role of a board? Because we have a lot of smaller districts where the board can get into the day-to-day operations. And what we find out, that can create a lot of stress and tension among staff, but also stress and tension within the board, because they don't understand what their exact role is as a board. And as this starts out, it's basically the board's role is governance. And especially with an air quality district, which is interesting, I went to your website earlier, and while it talks about the regulations and everything that the district does, there's nothing in there that kind of talks about how does it operate, other than county supervisors and member city agencies who are appointed to the board. What else does the board do for the day-to-day operation? I went through and looked at all the legislative. I looked at the Air Resources Board guide that is incorporated, which is basically incorporated in most every air quality management district's operations. So when I was asked to do this for CAPCOA, that was, when I talked to CAPCOA's president, that was really the direction of help our APCOs understand, so when they go back to the various boards, they can have a dialogue about here's really the goal, what we want to do. We want you to provide governance to our agency, but not drop down to the operational issues. So if you want to hit the next one.
Okay.
And if you have any questions, how abouts, what ifs, this is a free-flowing. So what's interesting is when you look at the Air Resources Health and Safety Code and you go down to air quality districts, there's different stratas because you're unique in that you're still a county agency as opposed to a totally independent air quality management district. So it's a unique hybrid in that you have county supervisors sitting on the board, members of city councils, as you indicated earlier, but yet when you step into this board, your role as a public official is limited to this board. So it's understanding what hat you're wearing, but from a risk management standpoint, trying to protect you so that when you're acting in that official role, as we're going to talk about California Government Code, making sure you're protected as a public official, because in today's day and age, public officials seem to be wearing a large target on their backs as they perform their civic duties. And so in doing this, we're trying to provide you the understanding of the role of governance, that there's no I in board, that you act as a board. You're a unifying, governing body. But we have some agencies, unfortunately, where they like to step off the dais and get into operational issues. I was doing a ethics training just last week, and board members were discussing, had a question about, well, can we review personnel files of staff? That sound, this is a
wasn't an air quality district, it was a recreation district. And they thought, well, we have to supervise the general manager, so shouldn't we be able to look at personnel files?
That's protected, is it not?
Yes.
Yes.
And so we had a dialogue about that, and one board member indicated, well, we've had some direction from general counsel, and he said, well, you can do it, but be careful. And I was kind of like, that's really not good legal advice. But the overriding concern is that's not governance. That's management. And if you look at, for recreation districts, that role of management is for the general manager. It's not for the board. So there's a lot of misconceptions about what the role of the board is. And it's only for governance. You create the policy, and then you monitor the policy and the performance of that policy through the APCO or your general manager, whoever your organizational structure is. So I went through, and this is from the health and safety, and you get into air resources, and it talks about your agency here because you are really a county agency, and it talks about, this is I heard earlier talking about your, we're a city of Jackson official. And were you elected or appointed to this board?
Appointed to this board.
Yeah, okay. So it's interesting how you even brought up, well, I've got to leave my Jackson hat out, and how am I going to... So here, membership of the governing board of each county district shall include one or more members who are mayor, city council members, or both, and two or more members of county supervisors. So there's the governance blend, which is unique. We have a lot of air quality districts, regional, that are appointed either to the various, because regionals could be two counties, of course. So counties supervisors may appoint them, and then whatever representative cities, or they're elected. So just, again, the structure varies. And again, the number on the board shall be determined jointly by the county and the cities within the district, and shall be approved by the county and by a majority of the cities. So it's all basically an internal election process to the board. So here's where it starts that governance. What is your role? So you're appointed by your specific county or city agencies, but you are adopting Amador County's civil service system, which is kind of unique. So instead of reinventing the wheel, you're just going to, because again, you're a dependent county agency, you're going to adopt a civil service system within your residing county. But more importantly, it talks about appoint the members of the county district hearing board and the air pollution control officer, and the air pollution control officer shall appoint all of the officers and employees of the county district pursuant to that system. So that's really that separation of governance and operations. So you're going to appoint the APCO, but then that authority now is transferred to the APCO for the day-to-day operations of the district through the policies that you've created as a board. And then it just goes through here about how, again, the Civil Service Commission or body performing functions thereof, the county finds that any person has been employed by the county. Basically, it's kind of this unique dual relationship. Even though they're employees of the air district, they in fact assume all the benefits, rights, and privileges of a county employee, which is very unique. SDRMA has its own personnel policy. We are separate from any of our member agencies. So here's where you have this hybrid of, you are a separate legal entity because you can sue and be sued in your own name without having to seek permission from the county. And that's really the standard of a public agency in California. So here, your unique hybrid situation is what we wanted to talk about.
So that means that Jim and his staff are actually not county employees?
Well, they have kind of, that's what I said, this is a unique dual.
Right.
So they are technically air district employees, but you've adopted the civil service system
from the county. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
So, as Jim alluded to earlier, what I found is because sometimes when districts are, or the legislative codes, so the Air Resources Code, Health and Safety Code, Water Code, others, and we'll give a couple brief examples. Some are very strong on the organizational structure and the governance structure. And so we have a lot of CSD members, so we've been able to adapt this in our training because it's very clear and concise. And it, you can clearly see it when I train, is what is the legislative intent, which is always a standard of law about, well, how do you interpret government code? So what was the legislative intent? And you see when cases go up to the Supreme Court, you always hear the argument, well, if the legislator wanted X, they should have said X, but they didn't say X. So the legislative intent is what it is type thing. So here, this is for community services districts, and the vision provides the authority for the organization and powers of community service districts. What I like about this, it's very clear lines of authority. Board of directors means the board of directors of a district that establishes policy for the operations of the district. Pretty black and white. District means a community service district created pursuant to this division, so under CSD law. General manager means the highest level management appointee who is directly responsible to the board of directors for the implementations of the policies established by the board. And that's a key function because it really sets the example of governance and operations. Show that, again, we get a lot of, especially in smaller districts and in some rural areas, you have greater interaction between board members and staff. And what we want to, when I do this training, is really to emphasize to a board, your role is up in the clouds. You're up here. The general manager acts as the conduit to down in the forest. So you're up in the tree. They're in the forest, we're in the trees. So we do operations. So it establishes that the only person that reports to the board directly is the GM. So when we talked about earlier, example of can a board review staff's personnel file. Not only are they protected as a matter of law as confidential, there's no legitimate business interest that the board would have in personnel files because they don't manage staff. And that, and when they sat there, they went, oh, but our general counsel said, with all due respect to general counsel, you need to go back and get this clarified, but if staff ever found out, they could say that was a violation of personnel policy and their privacy rights in California. So it talks about the legislative body, five members known as the board of directors, shall govern each district. Shall is a mandatory term. So therefore, that is their sole role, is governance. They don't get into operations. You're not going to go out there and check the air quality monitoring stations throughout the county. That's not your role. But you would set up a policy that Jim's going to have for the implementation of the air quality standards, how they're monitored, how they're enforced, all that. That's through policy, and then the enforcement of that policy is delegated down to the APCO. And of course, as it talks about, the Board of Directors shall provide for the implementation of those policies, which is the responsibility of the district's general manager. Again, then, legislative intent. We want to keep governance and operations separate and distinct. The role of the board. So, a majority of the total membership of the board shall constitute a quorum for the transaction of business, and we established that just a little earlier today, making sure we had enough people here. I've had a couple of agencies in Southern California. One was a CSD, which is required to have five board members. Well, it was a very small agency. They couldn't get they only had three positions filled and two went vacant, but they thought, oh, great, you know, we got a quorum. So we could handle business. And they went for several years with three active board members conducting district business. So finally, when it got to the attention of the local county district attorney's office, they came back and said, well, wait a minute, you're CSD, right? And I said, yeah. You have a quorum when you have a board meeting. Yeah, we got our three members. So what was the recent votes? Well, there's 2-1. And no, that doesn't work that way because it's the total membership of the board. So if it was a 2-1, it failed. So they're in a very precarious position because the DA could have ordered them to go back and to reconduct all that business because any contract they entered into, any action item, theoretically was voided because they didn't have a legal quorum. And then when the county came in and said, okay, we're going to appoint two people to the board. And that was a different argument. because they wanted to resist the counties, what they found thought was the long arm of the county. But it was like, the Board of Supervisors has to. They're the next agency up on the food chain. They're responsible for your agency.
So Dennis, you have referred a number of times to the CSD law. Can we presume that everything you're presenting here, even those sections that deal with CSDs in particular, apply to us as well?
They don't apply to you because you're under the Air Resources, but it doesn't go into, and that's why I bring this up, it doesn't go into this specific operational governance in the Air Resources codes. It really just talks about the establishment of the district and vis-a-vis a county or a regional district, and then it's kind of silent on, okay, you get elected, what is your role? You walked in here today, is there something that, a manual or something that says, here's your legislative authority. This is what grants you the authority as a public official here in the state of California. And I couldn't find that when I first started doing this for APCO. So they like the idea that I brought in and say, you know, you can borrow, because this is California law. Eventually, you're right, it trickles down to all of us. This is cited under the special district code. You could utilize it for your own agency, because it has been passed by the legislature, so it's a good law. So, interesting, you were talking about your meeting schedule. What we also talk about with board members is, what is your day of work? Are you a public official every day? You're saying yes?
I'm saying yes. Not necessarily of this board.
Right, but for those specific boards, your day of work, again, you'd have to go back, where's your job description? So your job description for, as a public official, like under CSD law, your day of service is when you have a regularly scheduled board meeting, some board activity, or some legislative authority granted to you by your board. So tomorrow's Wednesday, let's say you have no other, for your other boards that you're on or anything, are you still a public official tomorrow? Can you go out and conduct any business on behalf of your respective agency?
Well, I behave as if I do.
Okay, see that? That could be a potential problem because as an individual board member, you have no legal authority until it's granted to you by your respective board. So it's part of my role is to educate, saying you come in for today's meeting. So as part of the Amador Air Quality District, this is your day of work. You are now officially a public servant because you're here at your regularly scheduled meeting. You've set up your calendar for 2017. Those are your days at work.
I think what we're looking at, too, though, is like, if we told somebody, hey, I'm not at a board meeting and you can give me $1,000 for yada, 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 still a public official in that context. They'd say that's a bribe or...
One more time?
Well, what I'm saying is, I understand what you're saying. You're saying you can conduct public official business when you're at a board meeting.
Right, because you act as a board.
All I'm saying, you're a public official once you're seated nonstop, whether you're having a meeting or not, because you go out there and you start taking gratuities or whatever, they're going to say you're a public official.
Well, no. See, what happens is you go out and take those gratuities, you're going to be charged because you're not a public official. You're a private citizen, and that's bribery or embezzlement, whatever you want to use, but you're not acting within your role because that's not in your job description. If you look at to be a board member for the Amador Air District, where does it say that you have the right to go out individually and solicit funds or just to go out individually.
I'm saying even gifts. If someone gives you a gift.
Okay, now we're talking about the ethics area.
But it's applicable
to all public officials.
But even beyond that, I mean, when I think of a normal day for any of us elected officials, I mean, does that mean answering phone calls from the public, either regarding the Air District or regarding dead trees or regard, I mean, that's how I feel I am performing my duty.
So in those cases...
Without a board meeting.
Right, but see...
people daily.
Right.
The general interaction with the public is just part of the job, so to speak.
Right.
But to say, to take on any authority upon yourself to do something, someone calls about that tree, I'll take care of it. Okay, well, you don't have the authority to take care of it. You'd have to go back to the APCO to do that. So what we counsel our members is that you defer it. They complain to you, but, you know, the individual you need to speak to is the APCO. If you have greater concerns, bring it to the entire board because, you know, I have no individual authority.
Right.
That's what we're trying to instill upon our board members is not to take on that. I'll take care of it.
Right.
And then suddenly, well, I told you nothing happened, and now you're getting crossways with your constituents. The best way is to defer and refer them back either A, to the entire board, or B, to the APCO.
Right.
If things aren't still getting done, that's a great way to monitor your APCO's performance.
Right.
But not to take on that individual exposure of stepping outside your role and taking on more than what your role as a board member for this agency really is.
I get it.
Unless you have an ordinance or motion passed by this board granting you some legal authority.
Right.
So the minimum was once every 3 months. You guys do it every 2 months, so you're solid. So, Board of Directors shall keep a record of all its actions, including financial. The Board of Directors shall adopt rules or bylaws for its procedures. And then the Board of Directors shall adopt policies for the operation of the district, including but not limited to administrative, fiscal, personnel, purchasing policies. That is your sole function as a board, is the creation of the policies, which then go to the general manager, APCO. So here's where we're talking about what is your day of work. Day of service means any of the following. Representation of the district at a public event, provided that the Board of Directors has previously approved the members' representation at the prior Board of Directors meeting. Because you have no individual authority, only the board can grant that to you. So if you were to say, other than someone who's already a member of the county board of supervisors, let's say you wanted to speak as a representative of this agency, you have to secure authorization from your board to speak on behalf at the county board of supervisors, or to speak at, you know, the Jackson City Council or wherever you're going. This is that checks and balances, because you don't have that individual authority. And the reason we emphasize this is because it could create a legal liability if you're out there on your own representing an agency or doing something and someone alleges some, you know, some type of claim against you as a public official, and we suddenly find out, well, were you authorized to be there? Well, no, I'm a board member. Hey, where's it in the job description? So that's the checks and balances about what is your official duty comprised of. Also, participation in a training program on a topic that is directly related to the district. Again, provided that the Board of Directors has previously approved the members' participation. So the authority rolls out from the board, and then you have to report back to your board. This is what I did. This is what I saw. What would the board like to do with that information? The board could say, nothing. Thank you for going. We appreciate it. Or the board could take some further action. But it's always a board decision. It's not one individual. So here we go. Board of Directors may appoint one or more advisory committees. So we have a lot where there are personnel committees, you know, financial committees. Again, those aren't mandatory. That's subjective. You may, not required. The only thing that is required, the Board of Directors shall appoint a general manager. The general manager and the district treasurer, if any, shall serve at the pleasure of the board of directors. That's the only employee. Also, the at-will doctrine. So the board at any point could say, you know, and you could have a closed session for the evaluation of an APCO or general manager. Just collectively, we're not feeling the love. Thank you very much. Your services are no longer required. Now, you may have other contractual issues on severance and things like that, but the basic underlying principle is that the only individual the board can hire or fire, separate, is the APCO or the general manager.
One other question.
Yes, sir.
Could you maybe send a copy of that?
Oh, they already have it. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get it to you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's, again, great in CSD law. General manager shall be responsible for all the following: implementation of the policy established by the board, the appointment, supervision, discipline, and dismissal of district employees consistent with the employee relations system established by the board of directors. This supervision of the district's facilities and services, and the supervision of the district's finances. Pretty cut and dry. And then this is really, as the job description, this is your supervisory goals that you set for the APCO or the general manager. How is the district being run? Here's our policy. Is it being implemented? What are we doing? Because it's also superimposed by all the Federal Air Quality Standards and the California Air Resources Board standards, which are totally separate and distinct from the operating structure of the district. The day-to-day, who turns on the lights, who turns off the lights, who made sure the boardroom was open today for this meeting. Those are all the operational issues that fall under the APCO's area. So, again, as we talked about, because you are a legal entity under yourself, so district shall and may exercise rights and powers expressed and implied necessary to carry out all the purposes and intent of this division, to adopt by ordinance and enforce rules and regulations, to appoint employees, to find their qualification duties, and to provide a schedule of compensation, to engage counsel, professional services, and to provide training that will assist the members of the board of directors in the governance of the district. So even the legislative intent is, we want you to get training. CSDs. It's just not you're elected or appointed and you sit down and we expect you to know everything. You need to have training to effectively provide governance for this agency. Any questions so far? That was kind of an overview of CSD. So this is the Public Utility Code. Again, just give me some examples how legislative codes had developed to emphasize governance versus operations. So the powers of the district shall be exercised by the board. The board of directors shall choose one of its members as president. We saw that today. The board may time to time contract for or employ any professional services required by the district board. And at the first meeting of the board, after the board has qualified and organized, it shall appoint clerk, accountant, general manager, and treasurer. Mandatory. Before you guys do anything else, Public Utility Code says you will have a general manager. And separation of governance and operations. Go ahead. The officers of the district, other than the board of directors, are the clerk, and accountant, treasurer, and general manager. Now, for most agencies today, while they do have a clerk of the board, very rarely do they. Usually the accountant, the CPA, is hired by contract. You may have financial personnel within the agency, but usually there's a separate professional service contracted by the board for audit purposes. Your agency probably utilizes the county treasurer's office. And then, of course, APCO. The officers other than the board of directors shall be appointed by the board, hold office at its pleasure, receive such compensation as provided for by the board by ordinance. So again, establishing the board's role. Subject to such restrictions as the board may impose via policy, general manager shall have full charge and control the construction and the works of the district, their maintenance and operations, and he shall report to the board in accordance with such rules and regulations as the board may adopt. The governance. Here's water code. Again, same type of situation. The board may fix time and place for its meetings. The board may create any necessary office and establish the powers, duties, and compensation. Go ahead. If you go right back there, the board may create... Go ahead. Yeah, sorry. Again, here's legislative intent. At its first meeting or as soon as practicable, the board shall appoint by a majority vote, a secretary, treasurer, attorney, general manager, and auditor. Then setting the precedent of
we're going to, you're established now. Now you're going to set the operational structure for your agency. We want the board to govern, and we want the infrastructure for the general manager. Here again, subject to the approval of board of directors, general manager shall have full charge and control of the maintenance, operation, and construction, the waterworks, with full powers and authority to employ and discharge all employees and assistants. So we have, unfortunately, have had some employment cases with our water agencies, and when they send out a letter to separate an employee, the general manager cites this government code section out of the water code. I have the authority vested in me by the board to separate an employee. So when someone then tries to say, well, it's retaliation, it's discriminatory, whatever, it's no, it's expressed authorization by government code, I have the right to terminate you. So, any other, those are just a couple examples. Any how abouts, what ifs? So here's where now we went from specific legislative codes. This is California government code that applies to all public agencies. So whether you're on a city council, county board of supervisors, this is where, when I do my training, this is to emphasize understanding what your role is when you wear that public official title, because it doesn't necessarily follow you 24/7. So as we talked about earlier, you have to have that expressed authority, and it could be by a resolution, by motion, authorizing you to act on behalf of your agency outside a regularly scheduled board meeting. Now you're acting as a public official. And while this is really good because it provides you, if you're a member of SDRMA, you're driving down to Sacramento to attend one of our meetings, our education day, and you get in an accident. Are you covered? You get hurt.
I would think so. Yeah.
Well, do you have anything in writing from, let's say, as you sit here right now, because you're not members of SDRMA, but are you covered? If you were driving down to Sacramento and you got in an accident, you're in your personal vehicle.
On county business, we would be covered. That's my understanding.
Find that out in writing. Don't think you're covered?
I think you're covered privately, but not by the own insurance and your own car.
So your own homeowner's insurance or right. Your own automobile.
We should find that out because I think we are covered by the county.
I think if you're in a county vehicle, you are.
No, you're out of a county vehicle. Let's say you're driving your personal vehicle to attend a meeting of California
official.
State Legislative Committee hearing, and you're driving down. But see, that's what you want. You want that protection, because you're not doing it as a private citizen, you're
right.
Doing it as a public official. So under SDRMA's program, you're a covered individual because
right.
You're in the course scope of your official duties.
Right. I'll find that out, because actually in state service, absolutely, even in your own private vehicle, if you were on state business, you're covered. So I expect that's true for the county also.
But shit, that's why you want to see that in writing about
yeah.
What am I, again, because they're going
right.
To tie it into your official duties.
Right.
As opposed to, I just drove, you know, to Auburn, or I'm driving
right.
Down to Stockton to see something. Now you're a private individual.
Right.
But that's exactly it. You want to make sure. So for SDRMA's program, I'm in the course of scope of my duties right now, so I'm covered, even though I drove my personal vehicle here.
Right.
I'm covered by our auto coverage, so our auto liability. I'm also covered through workers' comp.
I think that's true.
So that's why you need to find out, I emphasize, what is your role? What hat are you wearing that today? Because you want to take advantage of these coverages, especially in a litigious area as California. I mean, you get sued just for blinking at somebody wrong. So here, when you attend a board meeting, like we are today, so members of city councils, mayors, members of boards of supervisors, we just talked about, school boards, members of governing boards of other local agencies, are not vicariously liable for injuries caused by the act or omission of the public entity or advisory body. When you act as a board,
you are immune from any type of liability that could be construed against the agency. Have no individual exposure because there's no I in board. The board passed an action.
Except, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
But my understanding of that is if the individual board member performs some action that was not approved by the entire board, then it's possible that board member is liable.
Right. Yeah. So nothing in this section exonerates an official from liability for injury caused by the individual's own wrongful conduct.
Right, right.
So we send you down to Sacramento to attend a hearing, and you go to Fats, have a couple of drinks at lunch and that banana cream pie because it's so good, and then you get in an accident coming back. We're going to say, well, drinking and driving, that's not part of your official duties. So therefore, your own wrongful conduct, you would not be protected under the government code. I'm looking for my button. So, California Government Code, this again, this is applicable to every public agency in California. The trier of fact determines that the act or omission arose and was directly related to the elected official's performance of his or her official duties, the public entity shall be liable for the judgment as provided by law. So now you're driving down to Sacramento, you get in an accident, but you've been authorized by your agency, by your board, to come down here. Now, it's called vicarious liability. That liability is transferred to the governing agency. You cannot be held individually liable because you are acting in the course and scope of your duties. So the agency assumes your individual liability. So if I drive home and I get in an accident, knock on wood, I don't, that liability is transferred to SDRMA because I'm in the course and scope of my duties. My private insurance doesn't get involved because I'm here pursuant to SDMA board policy for training. So that's why, you know, we really talk about this to board members because we want you to understand this is why you want coverage. You don't want to put your personal insurance at risk if someone sues you when you're really in the course and scope. You want to take advantage of that legal protection. So here, however, acts or omissions constituting sexual harassment shall not be deemed to arise from and directly relate to the elected official's duty. It's a mouthful to say. But clearly, intentional acts. California cannot ratify unlawful conduct. So therefore, you would not be held immune from that. The agency would not accept that vicarious liability. And we've seen in California several examples of public officials going outside the bounds of their office. But any remember the mayor of San Diego a few years ago? Got involved with a sexual harassment issue with female employees. City of San Diego said, oh, not in the course and scope, this is on your dime. And he came back and cut a deal to say, I'll cooperate fully if you will defend and indemnify me, cover my, you know, pay any settlements or claims on my behalf. I will fully cooperate with the city. I'll resign my position. I'll sign a letter not to sue, and I will go away. That's how he got his coverage. Mayor Kevin Johnson had a slight brush. There was another county board of supervisors, Sacramento County Board of Supervisors, that was alleged to have engaged in a sexual harassment, hostile work environment with a female staff member. She filed her claim, turned around and filed a lawsuit, and then within 3 months dismissed the lawsuit. But at the time, you know, she was alleging he was engaging in these illegal acts while in office. So it puts a conflict between the city or county of Sacramento and that supervisor by we can't ratify these illegal acts. So what we'll do is we'll defend you because there are allegations. Hasn't been proven in court yet. But at the end of the day, if there were to be a verdict, that's your dime. We can't pay for that. It's against public policy. So, notwithstanding, this is a long thing, but a public entity is not liable to a plaintiff under this part or act or omission of the elected official employed or otherwise representing that public entity when the act or omission constitutes an intentional tort, including but not limited to harassment, sexual battery, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. So those are what they're going to sue you as an individual, but allege these intentional torts, then that creates that conflict. We'll defend you, but if that jury comes in and finds that you engaged in any of these intentional actions, if there's a verdict, you pay it. Okay, so now here's where the rubber starts to hit the road. So, if the trier of fact determines that an elected official's act or omission did not arise from and was not directly related to his performance of the official duties, so the jury now has determined you're acting outside the course and scope of your official duties. Upon a final judgment, including any appeal, the plaintiff shall first seek recovery of the judgment against the assets of the elected official. You are not protected. If the court determines that the elected official's assets are insufficient to satisfy the total judgment, including plaintiff's costs as provided by law, the court shall determine the amount of the deficiency, and the plaintiff may, and not a mandatory term, may seek to collect the remainder of the judgment from that from the public agency. The public entity may pay that deficiency if the public entity is otherwise authorized by law to pay that judgment. Punitive damages, as a matter of law, are not covered. So if there was a finding of punitive damages against you as an individual because of sexual harassment, a sexual battery, assault, or something, the board is under no legal obligation to indemnify or pay for that judgment. It would be held against you individually. It is the intent of the legislator that elected officials assume full fiscal responsibility for their conduct, which constitutes an intentional tort not directly related to their official duties, committed for which the public entity they represent may also be liable while maintaining fair compensation for those persons injured by such conduct. So clearly the legislative intent is to hold you individually responsible when acting outside the course and scope. And so that's why part of this training is to make sure board members understand, what is my job duty? Do I have a job description? So at SDRMA, we have a board policy. And it, I thought I had it here. I'll send that up to you. But it tells our board members what their official duties are, when they are a board member for SDRMA and when they are not. And so, like a lot of you, they are elected from their individual public agency. Their board nominates them to sit on our board. And then they are elected by the general membership. So we have to discern when the board members of SDRMA are, when they're acting on behalf of their own independent agency. But it tells them what their job duties are and how they collect their stipend for their official day at work. And then another area, this is just coming up now because you talked about earlier interaction with the public, things like that. But what we're seeing, board, a new question coming up to the California Supreme Court is, how many of you have your own personal cell phones and are doing public business on those phones? Okay. There's a case in front of the California Supreme Court. Yeah, you're exactly right. Lowercase courts, appeals courts, are trying to, you know, have differed in two different jurisdictions. One in Northern California said, if you're doing business on your cell phone, as your personal cell phone that you pay for, but it's city or official business related to your job as a public official, that is subject to the California Public Records Act, because it's the people's business. So your phone records from Verizon, Sprint, I don't care who you had, could be subject to subpoena. A jurisdiction in Southern California said no. There is an expectation of privacy. So that case now has gone up to the California Supreme Court. And they're going to make a final ruling as to when you're using your personal cell phone, you know, is that private or is that subject to public records? So you got to be careful of who you're talking to, but more importantly, where you're talking to them. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, all that good stuff, emails, all those are subject to public records.
Well, yeah, but only the emails that were dealing with public matters would be made public, any personal email.
Yeah, they would have to go. So theoretically, someone would have subpoenaed your email.
Yeah.
Right, it would go to your general counsel,
yeah.
And they're going to redact.
Right.
But just that labor to go through. And
mm-hmm.
Anybody else remember recently any email issue that came up? No? No? Okay, so. But you could, now, that's going to flow down to California. I mean, there's another classic example. And California always wants to be, you know, the leader on the left, and so.
But if you're using and accessing an email account that's through your
respective agency,
your agency, then it doesn't really matter.
Right, it's already subject.
Just to the device you're using it.
So my email is dtimothy@sdrma.org.
Yeah.
So everything goes to my work email, so it's all subject to public records. So I have no expectation of privacy.
Call you on your private cell phone and say, hey, the culvert's clogged. You know, plugged or clogged up. And
yeah. I mean, theoretically, but it could be subject to public records. So it's something to be watching for. I don't know when the court will address it, sometime this term, but that will be an important ruling because it affects, again, as you talked about, your day-to-day. You know, you're at Raley's up here. Someone calls you and wants to talk about, hey, you know, we're trying to get a permit or something. We're getting hung up here and suddenly, you know, our private conversations on your personal phone, that's subject to public scrutiny. So.
I think everybody, the other thing, again, is the communication of no serial meetings, no communication, and what's interesting is when this was the Brown Act was developed, it still contemplated that use of series of communications of any kind. So, kind of looking into the future, so cell phones, any type of communication, electronic, video, whatever it is, can be subject to public records requests. Because the whole thing is that the district's business, public agency's business has to be done in the light of the public and full transparency law. Nothing is held in the dark.
I have a private server.
Want to call Hillary and ask her about that? Again, you may have a private server, but if you're taking county business or air district business on that server, that would be subject to public records requests. But as was pointed out, you're going to have to hire an attorney or go to county council or air district council and have them go through all that, redact what's personal, and then produce what would be considered public. So for our board members, we give them an sdrma.org email address. And anything that's SDRMA related goes to that email address.
Emails are relatively straightforward. Text messaging is a different animal altogether.
But you can recover text messages.
But it's a much more difficult thing to control. Without a separate phone number, ostensibly a separate phone that is done or used only for district or city yeah. business, you really don't. Unlike an email address that can be hosted by the city. Cell phone number that's used for text messaging, which is kind of where communications are going these days, really can only be done on a device that is dedicated to the city, in my case.
So I have an SDRMA phone, and I'm authorized. I do text messages on it, emails, voice messages, but without any expectation of privacy. But that's what we're talking about, that crossover where you're using your personal phone now. So subpoena is going to come in a request for production of documents and say list all your cell phones that you own and the number associated with that, you know, which is your business, personal, which is, you know, business. Have you ever used your personal cell phone for business purposes? You know, attorneys are getting very creative because they're using the public records request as free discovery. Every agency has to comply in one shape, one form or another. So it's free discovery to see, you know, they can get minutes from board meetings and then the documents, and then sometimes they'll even ask for the direct recording and then, you know, all the documents associated with that. And it's, we all have to provide it to them because it's a public records request. So it's a form of free discovery. Everybody familiar with the Brown Act? Are there any questions about the Brown Act? Sound like you're all very experienced public officials, so I don't want to bore you to death. So,
plow through.
So here's the public records request that we're talking about. Emails, tweets, blogs. I remember I had a case where it was an employment practices issue. They were terminating a general manager, and a board member thought there was a real contentious action taken by the board, and this individual board member felt she didn't have enough time during the board meeting to try to express to the public why they were doing what they were doing. So when she got home after her meeting, she went on Facebook and started typing in all these reasons why we're doing this, and we had to shut that down because, you know, when she's typing that, she's a private individual. She wasn't authorized by the board to do that. So she was creating a huge exposure for herself and basically giving ammunition to the plaintiff that, see how they're against me. They're trying to get public policy, public opinion against me. So, but here, courts right now construing public requests have been made clear that email messages sent by to or by government officials becomes part of the government record, and that neither the officials or the constituents have reasonable expectations for privacy in such communications. That's the key. That's it. Questions? How about what if?
Question?
I hope it was helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Drive safely, even though you're not liable. Okay, so I believe we are on wood stove changeout program, item 5.
Yes, item 5 is the wood stove changeout, and we've got a handout to go out, and it's basically an updated memo that you have in your packet, but there's some red text that I put in on this particular handout.
I'm sorry, Jim. We're gonna stop just for a second here.
I just had a thought, and I'd like to rewind before we go on. I did have a question regarding the presentation.
Yeah.
Okay. Currently, we have, individually, in my city, we have city email addresses. I'm
right.
A city council member.
Okay.
Supervisors have county email addresses. We don't have air district email addresses. Should we, so that we can further separate our air district business from personal business?
I mean, that in a perfect world, but because this is a quasi-county agency, Jim, at your email address for the air district, how is it?
It's through the county.
So you're just going to have to specify air district versus county.
So we would just use our, in the case of city council members, just use our city council email address to cover air district business.
Well, they should be sending it to an air district, but if that's the only address you have, I mean, there's no expectation of privacy, so you're opening up to be discoverable because it's all public information now. So if it's going to your city email, it's still in your capacity as a public official because you've been appointed by your council to be on this board. Yeah. So either.
Yeah,
either
if you're representing your city.
So that would be an appropriate use. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, and that's related. I think, Dennis, one time we were talking either this last time or before about, I think you asked about the Air District policy manual. And I said, we don't have one. We have rules that are usually specific to the technical aspects of air pollution, but policy. So I guess in a way we default to the county policies for administrative, fiscal, personnel, but it got me thinking that at some point, you know, we may want to look at an air district policy manual if it's something that leaves us at risk. So that was one of the issues that came up with this presentation. And another one that you brought up, and Dennis, this question would be for you. So I go to CAPCOA meetings where I saw you last. Would I be required to get board authorization before I go? Or is that part of my...
That's part of your...
Okay.
As an APCO...
Yeah, okay.
Your agency pays for your...
Right. I just wasn't clear on the, you know, the public events or the meetings and stuff, whether what type of authorization. So there's a lot of good questions that come out of this type of discussion.
Yeah, great presentation. I appreciate it.
Okay.
So now we'll go back to the wood stove program, and you've got a handout there, and what you read in the packet is basically the outline I put together in response to our last meeting here, and it's kind of an outline of the program as I see it coming together. And of course, at the bottom, I was asked to bring back a request for authorization for funding, which I have at the bottom of that memo. But the one you have now with the red, that was updated in red as of this morning. I spent some time over at Sierra Hearth and Home with the owners over there, Stan, and discussing the program, and they provided me with some real good input and some questions that came up, and so I wanted to put those down in red for you to look at. And up at the top of the bullet list, you know, I have down must be an Amador County resident. Their question was, is it full-time, part-time, vacation home? Is it the homeowner only that's eligible? So those were some questions that they brought up. Next one was EPA certified stove for a residential structure. What about an outbuilding, a shop? Another question I hadn't thought of. They mentioned Amador Stove and Spa and Red Corral. I didn't have that on my list. They asked about down about halfway the non-masonry fireplace eligible. So those are fireplaces that are less, I guess, robust than a full-blown masonry fireplace, but those are out there, and those are not EPA certified. And people often want to replace those or modify. Would those be applicable to this program? And then low income, I was asked to bring back a consideration for low income individuals, and I came up with a suggestion on low income. apparently, Sierra Hearth and Home has worked with ATCA for doing pre-qualification on the low income, because my concern about the low income qualification is, how the heck am I going to do that? You know, what am I going to require? W-2s, you know, how am I going to determine income? And I know there's formulas at the state and federal level on what percentage of the median family income you fall in, but it might be worthwhile for me to work with our local nonprofit ATCA in determining the low income qualification. Permits will be completed by the homeowner, and state permits are required for manufacturer homes. I didn't know that. That's something that they brought up to me. So again, those are the highlights I wanted to touch upon, and be happy to answer any questions at this point.
Questions?
Yeah.
I have a question. How'd you arrive at the $50,000 estimate?
It was a starting point. I initially thought, okay, if we did the 50% or maximum of 2,000, that would give us 25 stoves as a starting point for this year. That's where I came up with that.
Okay.
Just as a starting point.
Have you received any questions about, from citizens about a program like this?
Yeah, because Alpine County has been doing a program with Sierra Hearth and Home, and apparently the program just ended as of December 31st. So from what I have heard indirectly and from the folks at Sierra Hearth and Home is that there are people that are in Amador County that are interested in this program, but we haven't offered one for quite some time, as you know.
Yes, thank you.
Please,
questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Pleased to see that you incorporated some of the comments from our last meeting into the proposal. For example, allowing for future pre-qualification by other other vendors. Has the Amador Stove and Spa and Red Corral, have they been pre-qualified?
I have not made contact with them, but I will. They're on my list to visit.
And recall the conversation, the idea was that any other qualified vendor could go through the pre-qualification process, even Lowe's, for example, if they wanted to play the game.
That's true.
And deal with the paperwork.
That was the intent, yes.
My concern last time regarding low-income applicants is still a concern, even though there may be a way forward using ATCAA. I just don't want that component of the program to be an administrative burden,
right,
a significant
right.
administrative burden on you and district staff. So I'd still want to know, even if ATCAA is the right mechanism to use for pre-qualification of low-income applicants, I'd want to know that process is straightforward and that the answer, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, can be readily attained without a lot of work on your end.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because that's a big concern for us, is getting real deep in the weeds on the whole low income. You know, I did quite a bit of research in the State Department of Housing and Community Development and the median family income for Amador. You have three levels, low, extremely low, and very low, and it gets real complicated. But in talking to Sierra Hearth and Home, they said that the way the low income was handled with the Alpine County program is ATCA was utilized, and ATCA was able to give them an approval on this individual does meet the qualifications, they're good to go, or no, they don't. So it was kind of a yes or no from ATCA, and it sounded like it made it very streamlined.
Right. ATCA has strong requirements for the grants and the programs they issue.
Good.
So,
good.
Yeah.
I had another question, Jim, pardon me, regarding the program overall. I remember discussion from the board members that have been around a little longer than I about previous programs that didn't work so well because turns out the stove was not necessarily the biggest cost factor in an overall retrofit,
right.
And that the flu sometimes costs as much as the stove. I didn't see how that was addressed here. Does the, is this for the stove only, or does this...
This is towards the total cost of a stove and installation. And previously we brought back a table, and I can dig it back out, but Matt did some research for me on the cost of a low, mid, and high range stove, what the cost would be for the installation and the pipe and everything that was needed. What we arrived at as a general consensus is it was about $4,000 is where it was coming in at. And so this $2,000 is a pretty good estimation of half the cost on the whole thing.
I would ask only that the promotional materials for the program, assuming the board moves forward with it, would maybe clarify that it is really the program is for a complete installation.
Okay.
Just so that folks that may have been dissuaded in previous cycles will know that this is maybe different,
And then it does include the full installation, including flues and whatever other appurtenances are necessary for a complete installation.
Sure.
I have one last comment, and then I'll shut up, Lynn.
That's okay. Take your time.
On the first bulleted item, must be an amateur resident, and the question is, does that apply to full-time, part-time, vacation rental owners? My own opinion is it doesn't matter. Air pollution, if it comes from a home in Amador County, the idea is to improve air quality in Amador County, and I don't care who.
I disagree.
No, you would.
We argued this when we did it 5 years ago. I don't think you were even here then, Jim, about the qualifications, because there's only a certain amount of stoves we were able to do. I think it was 20. One at that time, Brian? Yeah. Finally went to just full-time. Excuse me. That's what we...
My own personal opinion is, I don't care. One vote, I don't care.
I'll tell you why. If you're going full-time, you're probably get more usage out of that stove. And if a person comes up and has a cabin at, say, Panther Creek or Kirkwood, they might only use it 12 times a year.
I get that. But full-time can go part-time, can go vacation rental, you know, in a matter of one sales cycle. We see it all the time. We see it all the time in Sutter Creek. I mean, permanent resident today, vacation rental tomorrow. Happens all the time. So I don't know that we need to get into
the levels
of
prioritization, you know, higher priority for full-time, because I do believe with I came to the same conclusion that my colleague here had, that if you're full-time here, you're more likely to burn more here, and therefore you might pollute more. So that makes sense. I don't know, unless there's evidence to the contrary. Higher priority for full-time people as opposed to vacation rental.
I think we could certainly incorporate a hierarchy or a priority.
Maybe there's a way to assess how often they're using the stove. If we're running short on replacement stoves, monies to do that.
However, the issue that's also in here of owner only eligible, I think, should be enforced.
Yes, I do too. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's the owner that's...
It'd be simpler. Otherwise, the owner may say, I didn't want my stove replaced.
Exactly.
Yeah, that one, I kind of agreed. It's a no-brainer. We'll do that, yeah.
Sounds good.
What if there's a certain percentage for full-time as compared to part-time set aside?
A percentage of the number? Yeah, I agree with you. We could say, okay, if we're going to do 25 stoves in the next year, five of them could be vacation or part-time, the other 20 would be the full-time, yeah.
Who determines full-time, part-time? Do you take the owner's word for it? Come on, I mean,
just
be
true.
Careful that we don't true. Get into a situation where, you know, you're playing judge and jury on who's a full-time and part-time resident. And keep it simple.
Although that should be easy to verify from the assessor's office.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Oh, you got a KGB agent for your assessor.
Well, if they're registered to vote here, they probably reside here.
Oh, that's a good point.
But not everyone's registered to vote, so that lives here full time.
Simple.
Yeah. Okay, any more questions? You're looking for a board approval on this project?
Yeah, an authorization of $50,000 set aside for this program.
And where does the $50,000 come from? I'm kind of new at this.
Yeah, the $50,000, we have a reserve, a cash reserve that has been built up over time, and I think currently we're at... we're going to get to it, I think, in a little bit, but we're... What was that? The cash reserve?
It's 518.
518, $518,230. So previously in these meetings, we had discussion on coming up with programs to help draw down that cash reserve and get it back into the community, and this is one of the programs that we would be doing that with.
Jim, are you ready, though? Like, we didn't address the outbuilding a shop.
Yeah, I'm going to spend some more time talking to people and kind of refining this, and
okay.
I feel pretty good with the direction that's been given, that I can move forward.
Okay.
But yeah, I think so.
So what would the form of action today take?
It would be a motion to approve the new wood stove change-out program for 2017 in the amount of $50,000.
With final details, are you going to bring back a final?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we're going to meet in March.
In regards to full-time?
Yeah,
part-time.
All that.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
That was my question.
We'll flesh that out.
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
I'd second that.
Okay.
Chairman.
Pat Crew. Any other questions, discussion? All those in favor of approving the wood stove program plan and authorizing $50,000 for that program, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? You?
I would just like to clarify that please put on your tickler file to bring back the final form.
Yes.
Of the program, so that if somebody stops us on the street and asks us for information.
Okay.
What we're first going to do is direct them back to you.
Right? yeah.
But it would help if we knew at the post office somebody bangs us on the head for a detail or two. We know what we're talking about.
Send them to
you. No problem.
That's one of those examples of when you get the question, defer it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to item 6, APCO's update, information only.
Okay, and I can move through the rest of this stuff pretty quickly. The CCAD program, which is our city-county agency diesel replacement program, there's a kind of summary chart called CCAD 2016 distributions, and you can see that we have three that have been completed, the Amador Water Agency, City of Sutter Creek, Amador County Public Works, for a grand total of $65,719. We've got two that are pending, City of Ione and City of Jackson Fire Department. That'll bring our total up to $100,122. And then we have two that have demonstrated interest, but we have not been able to get them to move yet, and that's ARSA and then also ACTC. That's where we're at with this program. And so far, I think it's been pretty successful and has been going pretty well.
And again, Pat and Frank, for your, Pat, you've been here, so this is another program that we put together to try to, utilize some of those excess funds.
So. Put them back into the community.
Put them back into the community.
Yep. Gross polluters.
So, Jim, with respect to ARSA, for example, demonstrated interest, but can't seem to pull the trigger. What's really going on there? Are you pinging ARSA and you're not getting any response?
We're pinging them and we're getting some response, but it seems like there's been a number of issues that they haven't been able to either focus on it or be able to really move forward yet. So we just have agreed to keep on them, and I know Matt goes out and touches base with Carl over at ARSA, and we feel like it's going to happen. It's just taken a little longer than obviously some of these others. We'll get there.
And if somebody could prod ARSA into movement, are you taking applications currently, or has the application cycle come and gone? And
no, we're still
taking them.
We have to
wait for the next cycle.
We're still taking them. Yeah.
Do you have any estimate as to if both of those agencies came forward, what kind of money you're talking about?
Well, I would estimate the maximum amount, which is $25,000 each.
Right.
So that would bring us up to $150,122.
Gotcha.
If they go maximum.
Gotcha.
And that's well within our budget, which we allotted for this year, which was $180,000. So actually, with these this list that you're looking at, it puts us right in the ballpark of what we budgeted and what we planned for.
Curious question. Were pretty much most of the special districts in the cities notified of this?
Yes. Yes, they were. Well, most all the districts that we regulate, so that we have some sort of interaction as a regulatory and enforcement agency. Okay. If there's nothing else on that, we'll go to the next one, which is changes to county special districts. I put an email in here from Tacy Onetto. She responded that payroll changes don't apply to the Air District because of the Air District employees are actually county employees. Unlike all other special districts, except IHSS 2, there will not be any changes as to how the Air District payroll is handled. So that question had come up previously, and I just wanted to close the loop on that. The next item is a public education and outreach, outdoor burning, draft letter to the editor, website, logo refresh. The first thing you have is a flyer that we're using to do some advertising and some outreach. You may have heard it on the hometown radio. You may have seen it in the newspaper. It's got really good information on outdoor burning, how burn days are determined. We added that in this time because we get so many questions on how burn days are determined and what's the matter with you guys at the Air District. Why can't, both sides, why can't we burn and why are they burning? They shouldn't be burning.
Right.
So we put this together and we've had a very positive response from it thus far. So that's that. The other thing is draft letter to the editor. I went ahead and changed this from a press release to kind of a letter. And I put together kind of just a little story about the CCAD program and what we're doing. And I would be looking to send that out here pretty soon. And then, The website, just to let you know, we don't have anything in here for you to look at, but we are looking and evaluating our website. Dennis gave me some feedback today. He was trying to find some stuff on the website. We know our website needs some attention and it needs some updating. We want it to be more user-friendly. We want it to have, you know, pertinent, valuable information that the public can access. And it's always a challenge when you're trying to do a million other things and it's like, oh no, the website hasn't been updated. But we're going to make an effort to take a look at the website and try and make it the most useful tool we can for the people.
Very critical, as I'm sure you know, Jim, to have some staff person assigned to keeping the website updated.
Yeah. So then lastly is logo refresh. And the first page gives you our existing logo, the kind of cartoonish picture. We have received comments that folks don't like our logo. They think it's a bit cartoonish. So we did, just for the fun of it, come up with a couple ideas on a potential logo. I would bring back at a later meeting maybe some additional information regarding the logo and see if the board of directors would be interested in pursuing maybe an update to our logo. I'm not asking for, obviously we can't take any action right now on this item, but I just kind of wanted to give you a heads up that is something that has been mentioned to me, so I thought I would bring it up to you. As a matter of fact, I had the logo stuck on the side of my Jeep, my county or Air District vehicle, and somebody said, you look like you ought to be at the Boca Vista golf course, tending to a golf course, because the logo was, they thought it was a little amateurish. But anyways, moving on, to the next one is the financials that we include every meeting for you, and those are there for your review. We'll be obviously coming back in the near months with our draft budget for the new fiscal year. But this is the balance sheets and summary report and expenses and revenues.
Jim, I have a question.
Yes.
Typically about this time of year, halfway through the fiscal year, I'm curious about our projections for year end. Where are we? Can you step back and kind of give us a big picture projection of what we're likely to look at or look like at the end of this fiscal year from a revenue and expense standpoint. It's hard to tell from this because of the way some of the money shows up in big chunks.
Right, right, it does. You're right, it is a little bit of a challenge, but if you look at, in this, it would be the third page, the revenue and expenses budget versus actual. It looks like our total for income or revenue is running at 68.3% of budget, and the expenses look like their total expenses are running at 53.8%. So I would say we're pretty darn good, right on track for mid-budget year for where we're at.
I would have taken that at face value if we had revenue that comes in regularly every month and,
right.
Sewer bills, right? But right. That's not the way our money comes. It comes in blobs.
Right. Right?
So if we had, if our revenue stream is front-loaded to the first half of the fiscal year, I'd start to be concerned about the second half. So that's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
Anything that's going to blow our budget out of the water on either side, revenue or expense?
No, I don't see anything that alarms me or concerns me. However, we've discussed the fact that over the course of 5 or 6 years, the Air District has been carrying revenue into the reserve account and steadily building up that reserve account, which is why we've had these discussions on these programs. So I just don't have a real exact feeling on where we're going to come out. I'm working to hopefully not carry a bunch of money into reserves again, but I just don't know for sure right yet. I can do a little more investigation into this for you and bring it back at the next meeting to see what we might be looking at come June 30th of this year. You know, my hope is that we're not sweeping $100,000 into reserves because that's what we're trying to avoid.
Well, and that'll be particularly important in our March meeting because we're going to start to talk about budget issues. So we're going to need that information to know
absolutely
how it's looking for next fiscal year.
Yeah.
One last question. At our last meeting, we talked a lot about the vegetation bin program and whether or not to keep that in place, and if we did, whether or not it should take the same form or be expanded or, you know, all of that. And we decided as a board that we wanted to revisit that whole issue in the winter.
That's right.
Because the program starts back up theoretically in the spring.
Right.
But it wasn't on this agenda. So what's the where are you headed with that?
Not on this agenda, but I will tell you, as staff, we have been discussing it, and we have been looking at the program and looking at the problems and the issues that have developed, and we've been looking at the amount of money we're spending on it, what's been budgeted, how it's been spent, you know, to what frequency, over what months. So I wasn't able to bring it forward, but I am planning on bringing it forward to the next meeting in March and having some sort of agenda item so that we can really dig into that and determine what we want to do.
Yeah, it's a big ticket item.
Yeah.
I just want to know that we're getting bang for the buck.
Right. And as I said, that will be brought back for you at the next meeting. But we have been talking about it quite a bit, actually.
And,
thank you.
And just so you know, citizens in District 3 love those needle bins and wonder why, you know, their street can't have one.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
We've tried to explain that. But and also in this budget presentation, your estimate right now is that you'd have almost 11% net income, and so you're hoping to get that down to close to zero.
That's the goal.
Yes,
exactly. At some point.
Exactly. Thank you. Any other questions?
No. Okay, and so let me figure out where I was. What did I do with my agenda? Okay.
Did you do the Fetcher and Company audit?
Okay. Yeah, I can't find my agenda that I was looking off of. But Fetcher and Company is, just to let you know, it's in progress. I don't have anything to report except that they are currently doing biennial audit of the Air District right now. So more will come back on the next meeting.
Great.
And then, what do I have left?
Correspondence.
Oh, correspondence. Okay. And that's the last item. And there's two letters in there. One that was sent to Lynn Morgan that was passed on to me. That's in there for you to read. Another one came into the Air District. And then attached to that is the response that I provided to the individual that wrote that letter. So I just wanted to have that for your review. And that completes
it. Must be getting old because I don't remember seeing this letter.
Oh, really?
Well. And we didn't respond to it. Well, it was sent to me, so I guess if anybody was going to respond, it should have been me. Oh, well.
Well, it's an anonymous letter.
Right, so that's right. So I had no one to respond to.
Yeah, so we were not able to respond, but we did do some education and outreach, in particular through the radio. So to some extent, you know, we were listening.
Yep, thank you.
Jim, could you email to us Dennis's presentation in PowerPoint?
Absolutely. Yep, no problem. Okay, I think that's it for me.
Great. Any other issues?
A little clarification. You got this one letter from Sandra Westmore. Did you look in her complaints?
Yes, we did. And I'm, as I mentioned into my letter response to her, it's on the back side of her letter. We investigated her complaints, and we went out there. So we did, in fact, follow up on it.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Anybody else? Yes.
We've talked in the past about encouraging several cities in the county to populate seats here at the Air District Board. Have you made any headway with those cities that seem never to send a representative?
We've tried. We've really worked at it, and I thought we were making some headway a few months back, but we reached out to the we actually called and found out who were the newly appointed members, including Mr. Simpson, and we also made contact with the city managers and administrators and the city clerks, and we really tried to get them here, but it's just going to take more effort on our part. And
we're one director away from a lack of a quorum today.
Yeah, and I will, as of next meeting, I will make sure we'll really harass them.
Maybe start a couple of weeks in advance.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Sounds good.
Well, Pat made a comment about that when we first started, and I'll just let you know I'll be here every meeting.
Yeah, good. That's good to hear.
It's important.
Jackson's never been one of the problem cities.
No.
Okay.
It's Sutter Creek, Plymouth, Ione.
What do you mean Amador City?
Sutter Creek.
I'm sorry, not Sutter Creek. Yeah. I'm sorry, you're right here. I'm so bad. Amador City.
Yes.
I knew that.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. And,
okay.
We'll see you in March.
Sure, we'll adjourn the meeting then. Okay.
Yes. Yes. I've never understood the need for a motion to adjourn. I suppose technically, but I think everybody's in agreement that we should adjourn. Thank you.
We're out of here.
Thank you.
Steve, we'll figure it out.